Good evening. Welcome to the Solaria Report. Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2019. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. Tonight is the annual wrap-up equity overview. We're going to take a look at the 2018 performance, go through a little bit of what the financial charts say, discuss the Rambus chartology. It's up on the web presentation under the financial chart section, and then talk about scenarios for 2019. And you can find the graphics for them, and the presentation will be up by the time we finish the wrap-up. It's under 2019. Get ready, get ready, get ready. Every year we, for our own planning and to help you with your strategic planning, we like to do scenario designs. There's a great Solaria report in the archives on scenario planning if you're interested. Caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. That's an ancient rule, and it's a rule we're going to have to remember this year and keep always in the front of our mind. The value of money. Money is a man-made tool, and the value of money is really a function of the law and the ability of a system and markets to keep their contracts. And in fact, property, the value of property is a function of the law. Right now, if you look at a stock trading in a multiple of 20 as opposed to a multiple of 1, that financial liquidity that takes the earnings and says, okay, the company's worth 20 times the earnings, presumes that a whole world of people will keep their contracts and keep their obligations. Now, when lawlessness rises, the PE of everything goes to 1. It even goes as low as what you can protect with a gun. Consequently, it's difficult to think about market preferences or values or to talk in terms of economics. It's really just economics in a world where lawlessness is a problem. And I think I keep stressing on the Solaria report the extreme importance of this FASB Statement 56 that has just been implemented. There's a special report on it, and I'll talk about it, of course, more during the missing money. But I think we are looking at a world where economics are increasingly driven as a function of overt and covert war, the covert war becoming more and more obvious every year in America. And you really, it's an environment where you need to know what your money is and why your money's in it, and you need to feel personally comfortable with it. It's a market where you cannot depend on the rating agencies or the brokerage firms to protect you, because we're talking about fundamental changes in the governance model and a reordering of institutions. When you get into situations where the financial issues are this extreme, again, you're talking about changes in the governance system. It's why I keep stressing that it is so important that we take responsibility to ensure that we're dealing in all of our aspects with people of integrity, particularly your banks, your CPAs, your attorneys. You cannot just take for granted that the system will respect your property and contractual rights. You have to make sure you're actually doing business with people who do that, because that reflects their values and they're willing to do what they have to do to back up those values and make them real. Again, there are three parts of the web presentation for this section that I want to focus you on. First, we have the 2018 financial charts as of 12/31 in the financial chart section. Rambus has produced a blockbuster chartology, which is really a blockbuster. If you enjoy technical analysis, I don't think there's anything better that I know of on the planet. Rambus has a natural gift, and I love looking at his charts because it means I can look at price and other technical indicators very quickly for a wide variety of the market. And Rambus has really done an exceptional job. So if you like technical analysis and are comfortable, I strongly recommend you take a look at the Rambus chartology. Rambus was nice enough to allow us to also post one of his posters at his forum, whose handle is Plunger. Plunger's a bit of a bear. Rambus and I are less sold completely on the bear case. So, but it'll give you an alternative to somebody who's a little bit more negative than we are. And then we have a section 2019, get ready, get ready, get ready. Right now we only have the graphics up for the scenarios. I'll touch base on them, and they'll be written up by the time we wrap up this annual wrap up. We're also going to put up a table press for our schedule. Every year we do a schedule of forward events for the year. It helps us stay on top of news, trends, and stories and make sure we know what's going on. I find it very useful to look at the different events scheduled during the year. Anyway, we should have that up by next week. Market review. I would encourage you to go through the charts yourself. I don't need to repeat them. I said last quarter that I was issuing an economic storm warning, and I'm just going to repeat that tonight. We're coming into a time of real financial and economic squeeze. The central banking punch bowl has been taken away from the party. A U.S. fiscal punch bowl kept the U.S. party going a little bit longer, but at some point that's going to wear out. Let's just look in terms of total return how the markets did last year. I was absolutely convinced the plunge protection team would juice the S&P so it would end flat for the year. I was wrong. It was down, including total returns, so including dividends, it was a negative 4.5%, and that's a real bellwether moment. It certainly, among other things, it means we're in a correction. In a real bear market, you had home construction down 30% and the home builders down 25%, so they were more than correcting. The European ETF was down almost 15%. The large cap China down 13.81%, almost 14%. So the S&P was still among the equity markets a star performer. In the fixed income markets, the dollar had a good year and so was up. The long treasury was down almost 2%. The intermediate treasury up almost 1%, intermediate doing better. And then the bond aggregate essentially flat. Gold was down almost 2% and silver down 9%, so not a strong year for precious metals either. As I said, the central bank punch bowl has gotten taken away from the party, and that means we're coming into a significant squeeze on resources. First of all, the G7 QE stopped finally at the end of the year with the ECB ending their bond buying program. You had the Fed consistently bump interest rates or follow the market bumping interest rates, but the Fed tightening. And clearly an effort on the Fed's part to shrink its balance sheet as the significant debt that it has bought matures. In anticipation of this sort of competition for capital, the U.S. brought its capital home. It was all part of the Trump faction winning the election. And they started a trade war with China and are squeezing the emerging markets for dollars. It's a reminder of the old adage, he who panics first panics best. The United States is receding into Fortress America while still trying to maintain the global system that gives it the reserve currency, and that includes using a lot of financial sanctions. It's returning national security operations to the U.S. along with the capital. And it's significantly increased defense spending. That's part of the fiscal stimulus that sort of kept the party going. The goal of that spending is to keep the global system going while it builds the space and drone capacity to project power from behind the North American fortress. Meantime, you have China, Russia, and lots of other countries rushing to create currency and transactional alternatives. They see the bear trap in the emerging markets. Emerging markets have significantly increased their debt, including their dollar debt. And now that dollars are becoming difficult and the economy is slowing down, it's going to put them in a bear trap. So they're trying to create lots of ways of creating liquidity, not just around the dollar, but around the dollar transactional payment systems like the SWIFT system. What was very significant about 2018 is the fact that all asset classes were down. The stock market was down. Gold and silver were down. Bonds were down. So you're looking at an environment where everything is down. Normally, when one thing's down, you can go to the other. Not so. Everything was down. The last time all asset classes were negative together was at the turn of the 20th century. It was 1901. And we saw investors very nervous. The actively managed investment funds in the U.S. experienced a record $143 billion exodus in December. So literally, as an investment matter, the best thing you could do was sit in cash or bank deposits. So it's not surprising that the top banks had record profits. If you look, I just tweeted out this week, the profits of the five largest banks increased from $60 billion to almost $120 billion, essentially a double. Apparently, the populace are good for bank. I want to make a strong recommendation. I rarely do this, but I want to make a strong recommendation that you head over to the website for the bond manager, the money manager, but primarily bonds, Double Line. It's Jeffrey Gundlach's firm. His latest webcast is called Just Markets 2019. So if you go to Double Line, you click on webcasts, you'll pull up Gundlach's Just Markets 2019. He does an annual market review, and this is his annual market review for the beginning of 2019, and it's very, very good. The best part is 20 minutes at the end, and that's the part I most want you to watch. So don't get bored. Wait till the last, see it through, but I really want you to watch that last 20 minutes. And here's what it's going to say, and I'm going to tell you some of what it says, but again, I would strongly urge that you take a look at it. I think it's well worth your time. Even if you say you don't care about financial markets and you don't care about the bond markets and you don't care about making money, you just care about being happy, you need to see this because it will tell you more about what is currently going on in Washington than anything that the president or the speaker of the House say or anything that the corporate media will tell you. What you need to understand is the U.S. deficit is exploding and the national debt is exploding. We always knew that we would come to this point where the interest would compound and start driving the debt in terms of amount outstanding up the S-curve. But it's very likely that we'll start up that S-curve in 2019 if we haven't already. The deficit in fiscal 2018, which ends on September 30, 2018, so fiscal 2019 started on October 1st, the deficit was $800 billion, but the debt increased by $1.3 trillion. And that's a result of natural disasters, for example, the California fires, a variety of sort of unexpected military expenditures, and the growth in people now taking Social Security. Social Security is has all of its money essentially invested in treasuries. And so when the Social Security sells treasuries and doesn't buy them, you can get increases in the debt. So the U.S. GDP is approximately $21 trillion, and the U.S. debt outstanding is now about $22 trillion. What that means is our national debt grew by 6% in 2018. Now, here's the important statistic that Gundlach points out. The first 3 months of fiscal 2019, the growth in national debt was $458 billion. If you annualize that, it's almost $2 trillion. That's an 8% increase in 1 year in the national debt. Now, here's the question. Who's going to buy this debt? If foreign investors are diversifying away from U.S. debt, if the Federal Reserve is shrinking its balance sheet, not increasing it, you know, then your only choice is U.S. investors. That's our pension funds, our retirement savings, our insurance companies, our banks. Currently, U.S. investors own almost 33% of outstanding U.S. debt. Foreign investors own about 30%. The Federal Reserve owns 11%. So we're either going to stuff our pension funds full of all treasuries, or we're going to debase the currency. And either one has very important implications to you and me. Needless to say, the pressure on the pension funds and the retail investors to pick up the slack will be significant, and that means basically the fixed income market doing everything it can to attract capital out of equities and into fixed income. Now, will interest rates go up to do that? That's one question, but there will be pressure. Another thing to think about is if you look at total unfunded liabilities of both the U.S. government and state and local governments, it's many, many multiples of what we're describing. And so that means more pressure for capital, more pressure on the fixed income markets. But the last piece of what Gundlach points out, which is a very important piece, is that we haven't had big corporate debt maturities in recent years, including this year. But in 2019, 2020, 2021, corporate maturities increased significantly. Now, what does that mean? It means you have the emerging markets in a dollar debt squeeze. You have consumer demand. You have corporations needing to roll over and refinance significant amounts of debt. And you have government that has ballooning debt requirements. Now, this is all like a pig moving through a snake. You know, I keep being reminded, I had a pastor once who, after 9/11, the Sunday after 9/11, came up and looked at the congregation and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, rush hour cometh." And what I mean by an economic storm is what I'm telling you is rush hour cometh. We've been partying on more and more debt, more and more debt, and now the bill is coming due. And the competition for capital is going to be absolutely brutal. What does that mean? Life is very quirky. But let me give you a couple of my expectations as to how it's going to come through. First of all, the national security state is going to do everything it can to protect itself at the expense of the civilian economy. And so we're bringing back a lot of national security operations. We're going to bring a lot of talent back from Asia with that, and talent sort of attracted from all over the world. But the national security state is not going to wait to get what it's wanting. It's going to rock and roll. If you listen to part one and part two of our news trends and stories in this annual wrap-up, Joseph and I talk about how the national security state is going to be very pushy to get their way with land use and all sorts of other issues. So you need to be prepared for a squeeze that's coming. I think we'll start to really feel the signs of recession after the tax time, but the rolling over in this competition for debt is going to grow steadily throughout the year. You're going to feel it certainly in the summer. So it's time to have a strong balance sheet. If there's anything you can do to pay off your debt, and do your 2019 and 20 budgets for you personally or your business to kind of batten down the hatches. Be prepared to have a plan B if the recession is more than mild. The problem this time is not that the economy will slow or the capital will be difficult to access or expensive. The problem is we're coming into a fundamental reordering of institutions, as I said, and I think that's going to have a huge impact on your time. It could have a huge impact on your expenses as well. But we're going to get hiccuped in all different sorts of ways. I'm going to post a link that I put to a piece that I wrote on shadow work for those of you who weren't subscribers when I published it. The inflation of this kind of environment and changes in institution can hit you very hard in terms of your use of time. Now, the stock market trades on corporate profits, and if you look at what's happening, whether it's recession or coming back into Fortress America, it means corporations are going to have to dig deeper in North America to get those profits. They've been using more leverage in the debt market, that there's not a lot more room to move. So in this environment, let's look at some of the ways that corporations are going to get more profits. Number one historical way is with war. So the pressures to keep the defense spending and the war machine going are going to continue. Number two, disaster capitalism. As you know, I believe that we're experiencing weather warfare. I'm very suspicious, and I think there's a high chance some of or all the fires in California were not natural. And if you look at the numbers on the rise in U.S. debt as a result of demands for disaster capitalism money, it really is a way to soak money out of the federal government. Privatization is one that I'm most concerned about. I'm concerned that this shutdown is being used as a way to tee up radical reengineering of the civil service and downsizing the civil service. I think there's a plan afoot to reengineer the transactional mechanisms and interaction with the citizen and put a lot of it through corporations. Whether it's, I think the big ones will be Amazon and Walmart, backed up by JPMorgan Chase and the New York Fed member banks. They're going to be working on platforms that include Lockheed Martin's satellite system. But a lot has happened with Amazon and Walmart over the last 2 years to basically set them up to do that. And I think if that is in fact the case. And we'll start to see after the Jedi contract is let. I'll talk about it more in Money and Markets tonight. But you're going to look at, you're going to see radical streamlining of the transactional mechanism. And that means, number four, the federal bureaucracy, the civil service, and some state and local is in serious danger of layoffs. I've talked about this before. The federal government has never been re-engineered in the way the corporate infrastructure has for new technology. And clearly the Trump administration has made many moves behind the scenes to set them or put themselves in a position to do that. I think we'll see a lot more on that in 2019. The fifth is budget cuts, protecting the budget for things that juice up corporate profits, but cutting the things that don't necessarily create lots of profits for corporations. That could include healthcare, retirement. It's one of the reasons I've harped on the missing money for the last 20 years, because it was clear during the financial coup d'etat that they were basically moving the money out before it was spent on nursing homes. You know, why not preserve all the money for space? And I wanted to make sure that there was political leverage so that when everybody said, well, there's no money, you could say, well, you know, how about that $21 trillion? Let's go get that back. Number six is secret money. FASB 56 is a way of creating secret money for secret armies that can operate domestically and globally, including doing things like weather warfare and fires. And those secret armies are now free to, in a very entrepreneurial way, continually promote new ways of creating corporate profits that also then create huge campaign donations. So if you've read my Dylan Reed online book, I describe how the model works. But once you put FASB 56 in place, we have an open door pipeline into the back of Treasury, which a very lot of entrepreneurial scary folks will see and certainly move to take advantage of. There's a reason that an ad ran that said Blackwater is coming. I mean, think about this. We had Dumford, Kelly, and Mattis use their considerable credibility to get big increases in DOD appropriations. As soon as that's finished and FASB goes into place, they, who were opposed to mercenary armies, are suddenly out. The guy at OMB who engineered the FASB 56 is now chief of staff. And we have all sorts of noise as well. We can continue to do Syria with mercenaries. Very bad idea. I did a book review several years ago on mercenary armies and why it's not such a good idea. You might want to take a look at it. The seventh is use digital technology and dirty tricks to centralize cash flows. And a lot of that is to take money out of the pockets of small businesses and households. Large corporations are moving in ways they haven't before. Here they come. Another is to radically reduce energy prices. And it's not surprising that as there's been noise about problems in the Treasury market, we see lots of articles suddenly floating out about talking about what, you know, we're now at a point with fusion that we can radically reduce the energy price. So whether it's breakthrough energy or other things, a significant reduction in the energy price could add so much productivity to the economy that it could turn a lot of these things around. It's worth noting that if you look at the success that the fossil fuel industry had in producing dramatic improvements in producing oil and gas over the last 10 years, that has made an enormous difference to keeping the dollar strong and a very significant contribution. And in fact, putting the U.S. in a position where it had tremendous supplies of low-cost gas has done a great deal to get the U.S. sort of looking good in the carbon emission game. What these eight avenues of generating increased corporate profits mean is that the nature of the drive for corporate profits is going to get more intense, more ugly, and my concern is more lawless. Now, they have a way of passing all sorts of laws that say, so FASB 56 is a way of sort of administratively adopting a legal position that you can break the Constitution and all the financial management laws. So they have a way of trying to make this stuff look legal. I don't think it's working. Included in this, though, is life is going to get meaner and more difficult for corporations, and as it has over the last year. We see countries using criminal enforcement powers and criminal courts to compete. We've got the chairman of Nissan, you know, tucked away in a jail prison in Japan. We have the CFO of Huawei arrested in Canada. We have a death penalty now delivered for a Canadian tourist accused of drug dealing in response to the CFO being arrested. We now have charges brought against Huawei itself. Huawei is the largest telecommunications equipment manufacturer in the world, and no doubt this is very much at the heart of the competition over 5G and who gets what data. The U.S. very much contributed to getting this trend going with Volkswagen and Toyota, with the Department of Justice targeting them. We now have two countries suing Goldman Sachs over the 1MDB scandal. And the reality is, you know, maybe if Goldman didn't run around the world breaking the law, this wouldn't happen to them. But clearly, business is getting much more dangerous. And if you look at what just happened to that Canadian tourist and some other tourists who've gotten caught up in the politics, I think it's getting a little bit more dangerous to travel in certain places with these kinds of politics going on. The challenge for investors is, do you buy subsidized earnings or do you buy solid earnings? If you go through, I do a screen for Solaria Investment Advisory Services, and I end up reviewing hundreds of companies. And the world is full of hundreds of companies that have fairly nice-sized market capitalizations and have been publicly traded stocks with really mature management that you've never heard of. There are lots of them. You know, they don't engage in, you know, the kind of things that get them big headlines, big negative headlines, but they don't enjoy the kind of political patronage and subsidy that many of the companies that have really been flying for the last 5 to 10 years have. So the question is, do you buy the guys who've got the political powers that be rigging things for them, or do you buy the people who just have a good business and can produce a decent dividend but are sort of been turtling along and not giving the investors the performance of the guys who enjoy the political patronage? And so, you know, one of the questions is, you look at the treasury market and what's happening in the U.S. finances, what will happen to those companies if the subsidy and the political rigging go away? So that's the question. Do you buy authentic companies with real earnings, or do you buy the politically powerful who make lots of money on war? The reality is, what you need to do in an environment like this is make sure, if you are buying stocks, you're buying companies with strong balance sheets, they have lean overhead, they have strong cash positions, and they have inelastic demand for their products and services. And they'll be able to take advantage of this environment. They just need, you need quality and you need endurance. It's interesting. Blackstone just raised a $20 billion real estate fund. I think it's the largest one so far. Clearly, they're planning on taking the advantage, because what you're going to have is properties all over the world who are going to need to roll over their mortgage, and they're going to walk right smack into an environment where the cost of capital has become brutal and ruthless. And you notice Warren Buffett is sitting on heavy cash positions. So clearly, people are organizing to take advantage, not to mention that when you can launch technologies that will dramatically reduce the energy price. So if you buy a big office building and then you have the technology to bring in equipment that will dramatically lower the energy cost of that real estate and the tenants in that real estate, you can dramatically increase the leverage. So one of the big ways of making money on new energy technology is in real estate. And it's interesting to see whether raising cash for investors or sitting on heavy cash positions, it's clear to me that a variety of predators are lining up to take advantage of the guys who are going to get over a barrel when maturities come due. Okay, let's take a look at Rambus Chartology. This is really a magnificent piece, and it's very long. I printed it out. It was over 100 pages. It's very comprehensive, and with a very serious look at the stock market. And of course, the question is, are we in a correction or are we in a bear market? And let me tell you why that's really an important question. If you look mathematically at the history of the S&P, investors are much better off selling as soon as we hit a bear market and then literally staying in cash and then buying back in when it goes back to a bull. So a modified buy and hold gets a much demonstrably better performance than simply buying and holding throughout. And so if this is more than a correction, if we are entering a bear market, it's very important to know that. Now, just because we're going in a recession doesn't mean we're going into a bear market. In 1991, when investors were, and particularly big corporations, were picking up lots of assets because everybody was hitting the wall over their debt maturities, the stock market was strong. And part of it was, I think they anticipated lots of earnings coming from the strong guys picking up the weak. So the other thing is, never underestimate the power of the system to deliver subsidy to U.S. stocks. If I'm right about what's going on during the shutdown and what the real goals of the shutdown are, the system is going to have the capacity, the political machinery is going to have the capacity to engineer a lot more politically engineered profits, you know, despite the fact we're through the taxes and we're through the big increased stimulus in the defense. So the other thing is that typically if you think you're in a bear market or your big correction, money will go out of equities and into bonds. We're at the end of the long-term bull market on bonds. I don't think bonds are so attractive. I think there's serious credit problems in the bond market. So at the same time, I would say I see many reasons why the bull could continue, but without having a very particularly interesting or rewarding or glorious year. So I had changed my bull versus bear to 50-50. I think 50% chance we're in a correction, 50% chance we're moving to a bear, but I'm not there yet. As I said, Rambus has a poster named whose handle is The Plunger. He's clearly in bear territory, and I added, Rambus kindly offered to let me add his post. And I thought it would be useful for you because it's always helpful to hear different cases. Rambus and I are still on the fence. We think it could go, the market could finish correcting and the bull could continue. So we're not convinced yet, but the plunger is clearly in the bear case and he'll give you some good reasons why. I think there's still plenty of money sloshing around that could end up in the stock market. And again, I also think privatization, the national security state, warfare, disaster capitalism has the potential to deliver significant steroids if the private equity guys don't cream it out the back door first. I would also say that the world will be infinitely better off with a bear market because we have an addiction to corporate profits and the related campaign contribution and the use of force to rig them. And I think it's done great harm to the U.S. economy. It's done great harm to the U.S. culture and civilization. And I'd love to see transparency brought forward to it and the model change so that Main Street and Wall Street can help each other succeed together instead of having a win-lose relationship. But at this point, we have a highly negative relationship between living things, whether it's people and communities or the environment and corporations. And that is a fundamental structural flaw that needs to be addressed. You cannot address it without addressing what is happening with the federal budget, because all of that is engineered with money and policies through the federal government, and it is engineered. I assure you, inequality is not a natural result of new technology at all. There were some trends I mentioned in the commentary that I just want to touch on. Caveat emptor with respect to the credit of U.S. Treasuries, U.S. mortgage securities, and defense contractors. I'm going to talk about next week when I address the missing money, which is our theme for the annual wrap-up. FASB 56, and also I mentioned the Green New Deal, which is a proposal for radical environmental policies that completely steamroll individual rights and individual property rights. These policies basically run the potential for massive amounts of what I would call prioritization. FASB 56 is very real. We have yet to see if the Green New Deal is real. But I think, again, this is changing the fundamental governance system of the United States. I would note Matt Taibbi just wrote a really good article on FASB Statement 56. And I was very glad to see him pick up on it. He did a very, very good job and linked to our special report on it. That's up in News Trends and Stories, and I would encourage you to read it, or it's just up at his site at Rolling Stone. Amazon, I'll talk about it in Money and Markets, but I think Amazon is teed up to get the JEDI contract. And I also think if you look at what is happening with Jeff Bezos and the press around his divorce, it looks to me like the deep state is making sure they're going to control that company once it gets the JEDI contract. So Jeff Bezos is getting beaten up, and in fact, he may end up losing control. We'll see what happens. Tech divergence. For the last 5 years, I've talked a lot about moving from what I call global 2.0 to 3.0, global 2.0 being an industrial economy, 3.0 being a networked economy. And we're now seeing many of the companies that weren't savvy about getting telecommunications and networked technology integrated into their operations not succeeding. So we see Sears really go into reorganization. We're seeing Macy's run into problems. So the clear message is that divergence of who's good with applied technology is accelerating. European risks. The EU is struggling. The EU has just given England a longer period to negotiate the Brexit. They were on a March 29th schedule. But we also have big doings with Italy renegotiating with the EU. So on one hand, there's pressures for the EU to come apart. On the other hand, France and Germany are pushing hard to do an EU military to try and put real gravitas behind the euro. Asian risks. A lot of the economy has kept going with growth in China and the emerging markets, and a lot of that was fueled with more debt. And now China is clearly slowing down. That's in part because of the trade wars, but that could ripple through. And if you look at the commodity markets, that's what you're seeing is you're seeing a drop off in the commodity prices because China is clearly slowing down. The national security state is a serious problem. Every time the national security state grows, you have people with guns who've built a bigger overhead, which is not productive. So then they go out and engage in more shenanigans and wars to finance their bigger overhead, and that gives them more money. It's like a tapeworm that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the question is, when is it going to kill its host? I'm very concerned about it in 2019, because one way for the national security state to prevent inflation from running away with them in the United States is they bring all these operations back, is basically to squeeze down ever harder on families and small business. They're doing it now. It could get much worse. Convergence is something you'll hear a lot about in 2019. The U.S. stock market has run way ahead of Europe and the emerging markets and the global equity market. And the question is, will those markets now catch up? They might if we get a weak dollar. We'll just have to see. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the dollar. And it's really going to be a function of the strength of the dollar, the slowdown in Asia, and the extent to which the machinery here delivers more steroids. Musical chairs. We talked about the crunch in the debt market. That's going to translate potentially into crunches in the derivatives market. And we see the global regulators warning that that could happen. The derivatives market is very obscure and very leveraged. Rob Kirby has done some great stuff and been on the Salier Report to talk about the interest rate swaps, which are the biggest part of the derivatives market. We have never in the history of financial markets grappled with managing such large derivative markets with such large interest rate book when we had rising interest rates. And the central banks are going to have to clearly be responsive to the derivative markets and try not to hiccup it. But anything could happen. It is musical chairs, especially with these kinds of crunches in refinancing. Peak everything. I'm talking about money and finance, but at the root of the problem is the fact that we have more and more people and less easy natural resources. I said last year when I was up at the mining conference, I guess it was in 2017, the miners are having to go further and further and take on more and more political risk and dig deeper and deeper to get the same amount of, you know, to get 1 ounce of gold. IPOs, even though we're in crunch time, You still have around the world a record number of companies taking artificial intelligence and new technology and applying it to very, very mundane applications like restaurant delivery and creating enormous amounts of equity value. And we're going to see those companies continually going, doing IPOs. So expect a big IPO market around the sort of hot technology. Environmental, social, G, and governance, called ESG, is screening. It's part of what I do in Solaria Investment Advisory. Our first quarter wrap-up is going to be in the latest developments on ESG screening. My question, is it authentic or technology? I think it's a wonderful tool that's going to be horribly misapplied and misused. We'll be talking a lot more about technocracy, what it means, and why we have to watch out for it in 2019. Bright spots. There's so many good things happening, but you don't hear about them. When you underwrite company after company after company, what you discover is there are thousands and thousands of really great entrepreneurs all around the world who see the problems in the world. They go find new technology, and they try to solve the problems of the world, and they do amazing, great things. But of course, you never hear about it unless you're digging for stocks. And the question is, can they take these new technologies, particularly new energy technology, and radically increase productivity at a time when the non-alignments politically and culturally, globally, are destroying productivity? Let us pray. So, as I said, what does this mean to you? It means rush hour cometh. So I expect significant inflation in the basic cost of food and basic household goods. I think the pressure on the system to take food and energy and use it for exports instead of domestic populations is going to be significant. So we've seen significant food and goods inflation. I think it's going to continue. I also expect cuts in individual and small business income coming from the federal government. I think that money is going to be preserved for the national security state. To finance that, we're going to get more debasement of value, and that's part of what's going to drive the costs and the inflation. We do see business complaining their number one problem is getting high-quality labor. So if you have the skills that the national security state wants, and there are going to be some companies who are not national security state, then you're going to see a tight employment market that's going to work to your negotiating advantages. Much higher cost of debt. Whether it's interest rates or terms and conditions, I don't see interest rate going up a lot, but I think it's going to be much more difficult for small business and the retail customer to get cheap, easy debt. There's going to be significant competition for customers, customers that you didn't think a big multinational would go after, they're going to go after this year. Cash will have lots of opportunity. Cash is going to be king. So it's not a bad time to have cash. Don't spend all your cash in 2019. There's going to be more opportunity in 2020. Our number one risk is the deterioration of the rule of law, and that could be overt or covert. So overt is FASB 56, covert is fires in California. Again, I think there's a very good chance they're not natural. If you're a modified buy and hold buyer, then you need to pay attention as to whether or not we're in a correction or a bear, and we ought to be able to tell that certainly in the first quarter. So keep an eye on it. I think gold and silver are likely to have a good year, even with slowing growth in China. If you look at what's going on politically, the signal to everyone in the reordering of institutions is it's not stable. Good for gold and silver. And of course, they have yet to reassert the bull market. We thought they were going to in 2016. And then everyone got excited about this, the Trump fiscal stimulus, and it's been sideways or down ever since. Go with quality. You need to do business with people who have integrity. You want to do business with people who believe in keeping their contracts. If you don't have a good bank, if you're banking with one of the really large banks that's transacting all the missing money and the bailouts and everything else, for God's sakes, get a good bank. We have an article called Bank Intimate up on the website, and it'll walk you through the steps of how to find a good bank. There's going to be a lot of opportunities in this environment. You just have to be nimble about seeing them. Again, I think the application of new energy technology to a wide variety of functions, and particularly to real estate, is going to offer a lot of opportunities over the next 5 years, but you're going to have to be very careful, and again, very careful about the quality of people that you're doing business with. Okay, so let's turn to the scenario design. Every year I sit down and do scenario designing. As I said, there's a great Salera report on how to do scenario planning. I was trained in scenario planning in the 1990s and have used it ever since. What you do is you come up with two variables that you think are going to have a very important impact on the future. You lay them out on two axes, horizontal and vertical, and it creates four quadrants, four scenarios of the future. The idea is to, nobody knows the future. I don't believe in predicting the future. I don't believe in prophecy. So I'm not a prophet. I never know what's going to happen. But you want to be flexible and prepared. And so by creating four very different stories of the future, what you want to do is allocate your resources based on, you know, how can I make sure I'm successful no matter which way it goes? And the beauty of scenario planning, I find, is by thinking through what these different scenarios look like, gives me much more capacity to kind of track what's going on during the year. Oh, you know, I knew how important that was, and this is going to the right, which means, oh, this is going to happen over here on the left. The two axes we have, if you look at the graphic at Get Ready, Get Ready, Get Ready on the web presentation, the horizontal is the degree of secrecy or transparency. So the more we move to the right, we have more and more transparency, which is typically good, and the more we move to the left, more and more secrecy. So you go as you go across that axis. On one side, it says overt, and the other, it says covert. I think the more assets and the more operations we can have in the overt side, the better. And unfortunately, we have a world that is choking on secrecy. Now, part of the secrecy is because various people are competing, whether competing with other nation states, competing with other corporations. But the other thing is great privilege comes from secrecy. And we have seen since the 1947 Act the creation of a national security infrastructure that is unbelievably expensive, unbelievably resource rich, and all of their resource richness depends on massive amounts of secrecy. Now, there are some people who would argue that they have legitimate reasons for secrecy. I don't buy it. I think what's happened is you've created so many legal, political, financial liabilities that if you were to undo the secrecy, all the people who are benefiting from the secrecy would be terrified of what would happen if they turned on the lights. At the same time, what I'll tell you is it's killing our culture. It's killing our society. We spent a lot of time in 2018 talking about secrecy. And if you haven't listened to the Amy Benjamin interview on secrecy, I strongly recommend you do so. It was one of our top picks for the best of the Salera Report interviews. One of my favorite books to talk about the power and importance of secrecy is Robert Axelrod's Evolution of Cooperation. It's a remarkable book, and I recommend it to you. This is one of the reasons why FASB 56 is so dangerous, because on top of the black budget, on top of the 47 and 49 laws, on top of the really stupid idea of letting corporations do highly classified projects, not to mention, you know, being our army and running wars, FASB 56 institutionalizes secrecy, and we now have created a financial mechanism to finance an entirely new and separate civilization, a breakaway civilization. And the privileges and wealth it is creating is the source of inequality. The black budget is the source of inequality, and we've just institutionalized it with FASB 56. Okay, so that's the first axis is secrecy versus transparency. The vertical axis is human culture versus inhuman culture. There is a great deal going on, and you'll hear Dr. Farrell and I talk a lot about it in the last 3 years of News Trends and Stories, talking about why it's so important that we do everything we can in our lives to promote a human culture, respect for individual rights, respect for property rights. I have a real concern that a great deal is being done to promote inhuman culture and to basically go to transhumanism. I've said before, I think the desire to integrate digital technology is basically a desire to prototype, you know, which is more efficient for the leadership, robots that are humanized or humans who are digitized. And so the whole trend is very, very dangerous. Another example is the use of entrainment and subliminal programming for a variety of reasons, but including to manipulate children in terms of their sexual preferences and activities, or to manipulate people into creating control files for themselves with pornography. But another example is the California fires and weather warfare, disaster capitalism. I think you're just ignoring the Constitution and ignoring even using eminent domain and doing land grabs just on the just do it method and resource grabs on the just do it method. That's what false flags were. That's what 9/11 was. So this is a more and more lawlessness and more inhumanness. And the thing that protects it, interestingly or not, is the secrecy. By us sitting around and pretending this isn't happening and not talking about it because it's not socially acceptable to mention this, we make it easier and much easier for them to do it. Okay, so the two axes, one secrecy and transparency, the other human versus inhuman culture, you lay those out and you get four quadrants, which gives us four scenarios. Number one is reformation. Joseph and I talked about this when we talked about News Trends and Story. Martin Luther insisted that the printing press be used to open access to the Bibles, and we saw the Protestant Reformation, which really revolutionized Europe and was part of leading out of the medieval times. So reformation is somehow we get with transparency and we get with being for a human culture, and we find a way to move out of this highly centralized, controlled governance structure into something that can really realign the different parts of society and align the financial system with the living system. So let's get money and the environment giving each other energy instead of tearing each other apart. Scenario number two is candle in the dark. So we continue to have a human culture, but it's going to be, you know, people sitting around in monasteries with candlelight keeping civilization going while the covert economy still continues to be relatively powerful. Scenario number three, slow burn. That's what most people in the United States are in right now. Much greater central control, much greater media and mind control, and a steady deterioration of legal rights and debasement of the currency, but it's on a slow trajectory. And so you have way too much secrecy, but the covert operations continue to be not overwhelming. And then finally, Apocalypse Now, where in fact the covert operations do overwhelm. And that's a scenario where the rape of Russia happens in the United States, something I'm very concerned about. Paradise, California has experienced Apocalypse Now, and other places in the state of California and around the country have experienced it. If you're not familiar with the rape of Russia, I really encourage you to go back and listen to the Salieri reports we did with Ann Williamson. They describe the really aggressive reengineering of the economy that occurred in Russia after the wall went down, engineered by the U.S. Treasury, State Department, law firms, investment banks, Harvard as financial advisor going into Russia after the wall came down, and basically teaming up with the Russian mafia and raping the place. It's part of the history of Trump's relationship with the Russian mafia. What you and I can do is, in every aspect of our life, continually work to promote a human culture and transparency. The challenge for all of us as investors in this environment is it's a low-yield environment. We are dealing with peak everything, and very high friction politically as more and more people fight for fewer and fewer resources. And we're faced with what has so far been a fundamental refusal to realign the financial system with the environmental system so that we can literally have a financial and living system which are working together for much greater productivity. Why, I think, is because it makes it much more difficult to centrally control. Anyway, what that means in this environment is we really, individually, we have to get back to basics and caveat emptor. I'm going to finalize the write-up for the scenario design section after we finish doing the Missing Money publication next week, but let me give you some bottom lines. The stock market, we are either in a bear or a correction. I think it could go either way. and you want to watch it closely if you care about the stock market. I don't think there's going to be a lot of opportunity this year if we come out of a correction and stick with the bull. So it's a time to stick with companies with strong balance sheets, inelastic demand for their services, who preferably contribute to the economy in a positive way. I personally am not interested in companies that are engaged in disaster capitalism and mercenaries. It's one of the reasons I decided to just cut and start focusing on screening, because I felt we needed a screen that basically screened out criminals. Bond market, stick with really strong credits who can support the cash flow in an environment where you have significant rush hour traffic in rolling over maturities and financing in the fixed income markets. I'll talk a little bit more next week about U.S. Treasury credit. So again, I would also say now is not the time to be in the junk market. Now, I've said that for a long time, but this is really not the year to be in the junk market. I do think that gold and silver is going to have a good year. And I do think that there's going to be opportunity in real estate, but it depends on the location and your ability to work your way through recessionary environments. You don't want to be buying real estate in a place where you're dependent on lots of civil service tenants, because the layoffs could be significant. Same thing with Section 8 or other housing subsidies. I do want to also put out a word of warning on ETFs. ETFs are fund vehicles that have far less protection than mutual funds. They've grown dramatically because of the reduced expenses. They've never been tested by a major correction. To the extent that there was some testing in the financial crisis, you could really get hurt in ETFs. I still think it's an untested technology or financial technology, and it wouldn't surprise me in the next 2 to 3 years to see ETFs really tested. In this environment, I'm the kind of person who likes to know exactly what company my money is in or exactly what bond and organization. I just think this is very much a time for bottom-up, back to basics. So, ladies and gentlemen, please check out the web presentation. I think the charts and graphs are invaluable. If you like technical analysis, the Rambus Chartology is really the Beethoven symphony of technical analysis. And again, after we finish the Missing Money next week, I'll get up our percentages and other description for the four scenarios and get ready. But you can take a look at the graphic now and think about it. So let me remind you again, I really encourage you to go to Double Line and listen to Jeff Gundlach's annual review of markets for 2019. You can find it on their website in the webcast section. And let me say again in summary that the ancient rule applies in 2019 more than ever, and that is caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish you good hunting, good night, and good luck.